What if the most cost-effective way to build a power plant for Earth was to manufacture it on the Moon? It sounds like a distant future, but based on developments this week, the technologies enabling orbital factories, lunar industry, and a new global space race are arriving faster than anyone predicted. The era of space as a purely exploratory domain is over. It's now a competitive industrial frontier. Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly strategic briefing on the technology shaping global industry. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, we're tracking a paradigm shift across the space sector with profound implications for Western business. We'll be covering three critical themes. First, the emergence of the orbital factory, where manufacturing in microgravity is creating products impossible to make on Earth. Second, the computing revolution in low Earth orbit, driven by a risky but powerful strategy of using commercial-grade computer chips. And finally, a new global space race in reusable rockets and next-generation power, with China making a historic move. Troy, it feels like the rulebook for space operations is being completely rewritten this month.
It is. The barrier to entry for industrial activity in space is dropping, while the technological capabilities are soaring. This creates both immense opportunities and significant threats for U.S. and European companies.
Let's start with manufacturing. This week, we saw incredible headlines about artificial retinas and cartilage scaffolds being made on the International Space Station, with results far superior to anything on Earth. Troy, this sounds like science fiction. What's the core technology here?
The core technology is microgravity itself. On Earth, gravity causes sedimentation and structural collapse in delicate, multi-layered biological structures. In orbit, that force is removed. We saw U.S.-based Lambda Vision successfully manufacture artificial retinas with significantly improved uniformity. Auxilium Biotechnologies printed three distinct tissue types, kidney, liver, and neural implants in a single mission, and Iskra Biotech's cartilage scaffolds showed a 10-fold increase in stem cell binding and a 3-fold increase in glycosaminoglycan production compared to their terrestrial counterparts. This isn't just limited to biotech either. Auburn University and NASA also demonstrated an inkless dry A&M platform for 3D printing electronics in space.
This is fascinating, but what does it mean for manufacturers on the ground? Are European pharmaceutical and U.S. tech companies about to be disrupted by orbital factories?
It's not about replacing all manufacturing, but about creating a new category of ultra-high-value products where gravity is the primary limiting factor. For U.S. and European biotech firms, this is a massive opportunity to develop next-generation therapies, create superior organoids for drug testing, and leapfrog competitors. Companies like Axiom Space are already building the commercial stations to house these activities.
So how should Western trading companies be thinking about this? The supply chain must be completely different.
It is. This isn't about shipping containers. It's about securing payload space on rockets and managing complex orbital logistics. Trading companies and distributors need to think about partnerships not with freight lines, but with commercial space station providers. The first movers who can build a supply chain for these unique, space-made products from launch to recovery to market will capture an entirely new market.
So if I'm a CEO in biotech or advanced materials, what's my first call on Monday?
You should be tasking your R&D team to identify gravity-limited processes in your current pipeline. Simultaneously, your strategy team needs to be talking to commercial space station providers, like Axiom, about pilot programs. The cost of an orbital experiment is falling, and the R&D advantage could be immense.
All right, let's shift from biotech to computing. For decades, space electronics meant expensive, custom-built, radiation-hardened chips. But now we have SpaceX and Google saying they can just use commercial, off-the-shelf parts. Troy, is this for real or a reckless gamble?
It's a calculated and, so far, successful strategy. The traditional approach uses specialized manufacturing to make chips that physically resist radiation. The new approach, pioneered by SpaceX for its AI-1 StarMine satellites, uses powerful, modern, commercial off-the-shelf, or COTS chips. The risk from radiation is then mitigated through software-defined fault tolerance. This was just validated by Google Research, which used a 67 MeV proton beam to show that with software like error-correcting codes and watchdog resets, standard COTS chips can operate reliably in low Earth orbit. It's why we're seeing companies like StarCloud One successfully deploying NVIDIA H100 GPUs in orbit.
This sounds hugely disruptive. If SpaceX can build an orbital AI data center with what are essentially consumer-grade parts, What does this mean for the traditional U.S. and European aerospace suppliers, like BAE Systems or ST Microelectronics, who specialize in those expensive, rad-hardened chips?
It means the market is splitting in two. For large LEO constellations focused on cost and peak performance, like Starlink, or the new 100,000 satellite network proposed by the startup Orbital, the COTS Plus software model is a direct threat to traditional suppliers. However, for high-value government, defense, and deep space missions in harsher radiation environments, the demand for proven, high-reliability, rad-hardened components is stronger than ever. That's why the U.S. Department of Defense just invested $16 million from the Defense Production Act into BAE Systems' rad-hard microelectronics facility.
So how should distributors and trading companies navigate the split?
The supply chain for LEO components will now resemble the consumer electronics industry, focusing on sourcing the latest COTS chips. But the value add for distributors will be in understanding and validating the software layer that provides the radiation tolerance. It's no longer just about the hardware spec sheet. For the high-end market, sourcing from established players like BAE, Microchip Technology, and ST Microelectronics remains the gold standard for mission-critical systems.
So what's the move for an executive in the satellite component industry?
If you're in the traditional rad-hard market, double down on the high-end defense and deep space sectors where absolute reliability is non-negotiable. If you supply the commercial LEO market, you must develop expertise in software-defined fault tolerance. Your value proposition is now about delivering a reliable, integrated system, not just a standalone chip.
Finally, Troy, for years, SpaceX has been the only player in town for reusable rockets. But on July 10th, China successfully landed its Long March 10B booster at sea. Are we seeing the start of a genuine global competition in reusability?
Absolutely. The successful recovery of the Long March 10B's first stage is a historic milestone for China. This is a 16,000-kilogram to LEO-class vehicle, a direct competitor to Falcon 9. At the same time, Japan's JAXA is actively testing its RVX reusable rocket, and private Chinese firms like CASSpace are testing their own reusable engines like the Kinecore 2. The era of a single provider is over.
Cheaper launch is great, but that enables more ambitious missions. How do you power a rover through a two-week lunar night or a probe in deep space? We saw a launch this week that might hold the answer.
Exactly. The other side of this race is power. Florida-based startup CityLabs just launched its BOR satellite, the first commercial spacecraft approved by the FAA to carry a nuclear power source. It's a tritium-based beta-voltaic battery, which provides decades of continuous power without any sunlight. This completely changes the design constraints for any U.S. or European company building hardware for the moon or deep space. This is a technology being actively accelerated by DARPA's RADS to WATTS program.
What does this new competitive landscape mean for Western manufacturers and trading companies?
For manufacturers, the availability of new nuclear power sources unlocks the ability to build persistent robots, sensors, and infrastructure for environments like the lunar South Pole. You can now design for 24/7 operation in total darkness. For trading companies and launch service brokers, the rise of Chinese and Japanese reusable rockets introduces new options. It will create pricing pressure, but it also requires a careful analysis of reliability, insurance, and geopolitical risk for any Western payloads.
So, a final actionable insight for executives in the launch industry and for the satellite builders.
For anyone buying a launch, you need to start gaming out a future with multiple competing reusable providers. This will fundamentally change your business case and cost models. For hardware manufacturers, your product roadmap must now include a sunless operation track. Start designing systems that leverage these new persistent nuclear power sources to create a decisive competitive advantage.
Troy, an incredible amount of information this week. Let's boil it down. What are the three key takeaways for our listeners? First, manufacturing is moving to microgravity. For high-value biotech, pharmaceuticals, and advanced materials, space offers a unique production environment that is now commercially accessible. U.S. and European firms should be initiating R&D pilot programs immediately. Second, commercial hardware is conquering low Earth orbit. The economics of LEO are being rewritten by the COTS Plus software model. While the high-end government market for rad-hardened chips remains secure, commercial satellite builders must adapt to survive. And third, the global race for access and power is on. The monopoly on reusable launch is over. With China's successful booster recovery, launch costs will continue to fall, while new nuclear battery technologies are solving the problem of power in sunless environments, unlocking entirely new lunar and deep space markets. In short, look up for manufacturing. Look to software for reliability in LEO and prepare for a more competitive and capable global space environment. That's all the time we have for this week's Troy Technical Intelligence. Troy, thank you as always for your clear analysis.
My pleasure, Susie.
For our listeners, we hope this briefing helps you navigate the opportunities and threats in this rapidly changing landscape. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an update. Join us again next week for your strategic briefing.